This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Winning streak ends. The Dow and S&P 500 break their longest stretch of weekly gains in 4 years. What happened, why, and what might be next? Taking aim, Disney makes moves to take on a behemoth in the digital space, Netflix. We'll tell you what they're up to and how they're going about it. And sales spike. Alibaba's Singles Day event is the biggest shopping day of the year in China and maybe in the world. Last year, nearly $20 billion was brought in, and even more is expected this year. We'll take you there. All that and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Friday, November 10th. Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Sue Herrera is off on this very chilly night in New York. But it was not dramatic. It was not overly stressful. In fact, there were record highs this week along the way. But when the bell was rung today and the books were closed, winning streaks were snapped on Wall Street. The Dow and the S&P 500 had their first weekly losses in 2 months, and the Nasdaq posted its first weekly loss in a month and a half. As for today, the Dow lost 39 points to finish at 23,422. Nasdaq actually eked out the slimmest of gains, and the S&P dropped two. Dom Chu tells us what happened this week and what may be next.
Stocks can go down in value, though it's been such a long time since we've seen any kind of downside move that many have forgotten that. To be fair, it wasn't like it was a massive panic-stricken sell-off in stocks. After all, the Dow did hit a record high just on Tuesday. But it's been a slower drift lower since. The Dow and the S&P 500 each broke an 8-week winning streak, and the Nasdaq snapped a 6-week string of gains. Real estate and consumer staples-related stocks were among the biggest winners. Meanwhile, financial and telecom stocks were among the biggest laggards. Traders and investors were very focused on results from big retailers like Macy's, Kohl's, and Nordstrom, as well as developments on the push for tax reform out of Washington, D.C. Some of the market's weakness was being put on disappointment over the Senate's initial stab at its own version of tax legislation. Next week, in addition to all the headlines out of Washington, investors will also be watching a handful of important earnings reports as the season winds down, including 17 S&P 500 companies, three of which are members of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. You've got computer networking equipment maker Cisco Systems, also home improvement retailer Home Depot, and retail giant Walmart. We'll also get economic data on inflation, retail sales, and housing starts, among others. In other words, plenty of things the market could move on, but will it? For Nightly Business Report, I'm Dominic Chu.
So let's now take a deeper dive into where things stand in the stock market. And here to give us his thoughts on that is Matt Maley. He's a market strategist and managing director at Miller Tabak. Matt, always great to see you. Is this market feeling a little tired, or is it just a little tired, or is it breaking down in any meaningful way?
Well, before I answer that question, I just say very quickly that thank you to all the veterans out there, and I hope they have a great Veterans Day tomorrow and a great weekend. But to answer your question directly, I think it's getting a little tired. I mean, say breaking down. I mean, you know, like Dom said, we hit a new high just a couple of days ago, and what the S&P I think is down less than 0.5% from its all-time highs. But we are starting to see some problems in the marketplace. You know, we've talked about or we've heard about stretch valuations for quite some time, and that's a concern. But more recently, we're starting to see a breakdown in the Russell 2000, which has been that topped out about a month or two before the rest of the market topped out the last time we had a correction in 2015.
Right.
Same thing with the high yield market. It's starting to roll over a little bit. And then, of course, all these concerns about what we're going to get on the tax reform side. So
There
are some reasons to think they might see a bit of a
pullback.
You
do
here.
Watch the high yield bond market. Why do you think it is rolling over the way it has been? And is it sometimes a precursor of what could happen next in stocks?
Well, one of the reasons, there are some reasons that is rolling over a little bit here that might not be a problem because, we see some of these telecom stocks and with the merger with AT&T and stuff that might be a problem or one of the skewing issues that's taking place in that market. But the thing is, it has come down quite a bit. And
right.
The problem with that is that we saw very, very narrow spreads between Treasury markets. In other words, you weren't getting very much yield for the risk, the added risk you're taking to be in that high yield market. Let's face it, its nickname is the junk bond market. And the thing is, when that starts to go down and yields start to go up in that market, it shows that people are willing to take less risk.
Right.
And when that starts to show up first in the high yield market and then tends to spill into the other ones. So if we see further weakness there, it could be a problem.
So what are you doing in the portfolios that you or your company runs? What are you telling your clients to do?
Well, I think right now one of the things to do is just to take a little bit of a few chips off the table. I mean, let's face it, we've had this unbelievable run on the stock market since 2009, and even just this year, it's had a great run. And the thing is, 10% corrections have not been eliminated. They're coming. The thing is, the next time it happens, it's been so long since we've even had a 3% pullback, I think people might start to panic a little bit when it gets down 10%. The thing is, they're normal, they're healthy, and if you've got a little bit of cash on the sidelines, you'll be less likely to panic and bail out at exactly the wrong time and instead buy on that kind of weakness.
All right. Matt, thank you very much, and we certainly echo your thoughts about our vets. Matt Maley with Miller Tabak. Well, Disney was one of the biggest gainers on the Dow today. The rise follows the earnings we told you about last night, although earnings missed. It was the conference call that made the stock move up. On it, company CEO Bob Iger talked about a new Star Wars trilogy and a new app that would be cheaper than Netflix. Julia Boorstin has more on the strategy that will eventually pit current content partners against each other.
Disney CEO Bob Iger laying out a vision for a new kind of digital company in which the media giant doesn't rely on TV distributors, but takes its content direct to consumers using the technology from its recently acquired BAMTech. The streaming video technology company will drive the ESPN app, which is launching this coming spring, and the Disney streaming app, which is scheduled to launch in fall of 2019.
Our goal here is to be a viable player in the direct-to-consumer space, space that we all know is very, very compelling space to be in. We also believe that our brands and our franchises really matter, as we've seen through Netflix and all other platforms.
Iger saying that the Disney app will be priced substantially below Netflix because it will launch with less content than Netflix. And as Disney adds more volume, its price will reflect that. But Iger says the goal is to attract as many subscribers as possible. And Disney's putting some of its most popular brands on that app as it pulls its movies off of Netflix, announcing that it's working on an animated series based on Pixar's popular Monsters, Inc., another expanding its High School Musical franchise, and a live-action Star Wars show exclusive for the new app, giving analysts more reason to be optimistic.
We're all kind of grasping at straws here to figure out what exactly will be the initial kind of investment that they make, and how to think about the subscriber opportunity. It's certainly encouraging to think about Disney leading into something that's going to be very broadly adopted, priced low, Disney-branded content.
Some think reports that Disney's interested in some of Fox's brands could play into a strategy to better compete with Netflix because it would bolster Disney's content libraries. Iger refused to comment on those rumors. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Julia Boorstin in Los Angeles.
And here's one to keep an eye on. After the bell, Hasbro has reportedly made a takeover offer for rival Mattel. The Wall Street Journal says talks are a result of the toy makers needing to survive as kids turn more and more to gadgets. As for the size of a deal, Mattel's market value is about $5 billion, Hasbro's $11 billion. Shares of both companies initially rose when the news broke, but take a look at Mattel popping more than 20%. Well, President Trump, fresh off a feel-good trip in China, brought his America First pitch to an economic summit in Vietnam today. Adopting a harsher tone, the president said the U.S. would not be taken advantage of on trade anymore. Kayla Tausche wraps up her coverage from Beijing tonight.
President Trump addressing the APEC summit Friday, a group of 21 nations representing 50% of the global economy. His message, America first.
From this day forward, we will compete on a fair and equal basis. We are not going to let the United States be taken advantage of anymore. I am always going to put America first, the same way that I expect all of you in this room to put your countries first.
Trump's taking a harder line on trade came less than a day after ending a visibly friendly state visit here in Beijing. And as Trump touted economic nationalism, China's President Xi carried the torch for globalization. Chinese venture capitalist Hugo Xiong says the two countries still have many areas of disagreement, but that having the U.S. out of a major trade deal like the Trans-Pacific Partnership could help the talks.
I think it's a good thing. So that way, China and the U.S., we can figure out all of our concerns and the confrontations first. I think that's more important as a businessman, priority.
Pacific Rim attendees at APEC are still grappling with the president's decision early on in his term to withdraw from TPP, which would have represented 39% of worldwide trade. Japan is now spearheading a new, albeit significantly smaller deal among 11 nations. Could be agreed as soon as this week, should Canada remain committed. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Kayla Tausche, Beijing.
Well, what started out as a Chinese holiday for people to celebrate their single lifestyle, Singles Day, has now become the biggest shopping day in that country and maybe even the world, thanks to Alibaba. Last year, the company had $18 billion in Singles Day sales, and today, Alibaba said sales surged, taking in $1.5 billion in the first 3 minutes of the event, $5 billion in 15 minutes. Shares of Alibaba were higher on the day, and Eunice Yoon was in Shanghai for us.
It's the biggest shopping day of the year in China. Last year, Singles Day chalked up sales that were 2.5 times larger than Black Friday and Cyber Monday combined. And this year, analysts expect that number to rise to as much as $24 billion. Singles Day used to be a day for lonely hearts, but in 2009, Alibaba turned it into a shopping bonanza. This year, 60,000 international brands are taking part, including 7,000 American ones, and that includes Lululemon and Macy's. Last check, the best American sellers were Apple, Nike, New Balance, The Gap, and Estee Lauder. And the U.S. is the second best-selling country to the Chinese for this event. Now, this Singles Day, Alibaba is not only talking about sales, but it's also using the event to showcase some of its new initiatives, which the management believes will transform China's retail market and also change what Alibaba does in retailing in this country. Alibaba believes that the way forward is to move beyond e-commerce and integrate the technology from their online platforms and users into old-fashioned bricks and mortars. One of the experiments that they're doing right now is with a supermarket chain called Hema. Hema is like a high-tech Chinese version of Whole Foods, and the idea is for shoppers to use their mobile phones to scan products for more information and also to place orders online and potentially get these groceries delivered to their home in 30 minutes. Or they could choose to go to the checkout counter and instead have their faces scanned by a facial recognition system, and that is how they pay. It all sounds very futuristic, but it is happening now in China. For Nightly Business Reports, I'm Eunice Yoon in Shanghai.
Coming up, follow the leader. That's what this week's Market Monitor thinks is a sound strategy for your portfolio. He'll explain. Shares of CVS up solidly today after an analyst at Needham upgraded the stock to buy with a new price target of $79. The analyst says that even with the looming specter of Amazon possibly entering the pharmacy business, CVS is worth the risk, especially if it can close on its proposed $66 billion merger with Aetna. Well, despite all the talk about the end of the Affordable Care Act exchanges, one might paraphrase Mark Twain, reports of their death have been greatly exaggerated. That's because in the first week of open enrollment, Americans signing up for coverage, the number of them is very strong. Bertha Coombs has that story.
Mm-hmm. Obamacare is under fire in Washington, but that hasn't stopped some insurers. Against the odds, Oscar Health is expanding this year with a new plan in Ohio, co-branded with the legendary Cleveland Clinic.
Of the members we signed up in the past week, since beginning of open enrollment in Cleveland, already 25% have chosen their primary care physician through the Oscar mobile app.
All right, step forward.
Oscar and Cleveland Clinic are trying to be cautious.
We're not looking for this to be too big the first year. We want to work very closely with Oscar, market this appropriately.
But now they're bracing for bigger numbers after Anthem's exit from the Ohio Exchange last summer. They expect to see strong demand from enrollees with chronic conditions attracted to the health center's reputation for high-quality care.
We expect that we're going to get some percentage of those lives coming over to our product.
President Trump's use of executive orders to undo parts of the Affordable Care Act, including cutting some subsidy payments, spooked insurers this summer. But the director of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, Seema Verma, says the administration is upholding the law, even as she disparaged it on a recent Cleveland Clinic visit.
We're making sure that people are aware of their choices and their options, but the reality is Obamacare is not working.
This summer's uncertainty led to high premium increases, which will hit hard for those who don't get tax credits. Yet demand has been strong in the first week of open enrollment. CMS says more than 600,000 people signed up in the first 4 days, up 79% from a year ago. And for people who receive subsidies, those higher prices for benchmark plans will result in bigger tax credits, and in some cases, lower costs.
The increase in the tax credit will be so much that it will completely cover the premium for the lowest cost bronze plan in the marketplace.
Well, a lot of insurers found their first year in the ACA individual market to be tough going. Cleveland Clinic expects its partnership to do better than break even in 2018, no matter what happens in Washington.
We have to drive quality and we have to make care more affordable. And those are no-regret moves, and if we keep moving in that, regardless of what happens in Washington, we'll be okay.
For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bertha Coombs.
JCPenney posts its best results in more than a year, and that is where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The retailer that has been struggling to bring in customers seems to have overcome that challenge, at least for now. Same-store sales topped analyst expectations and were better than what even JCPenney initially forecasted. Earnings and revenue also beat. The company said it is heading into the holiday season with an aggressive pricing strategy and tight inventory. Shares took off, up 15%, but a 15% rise doesn't get you very far, just to $3.17. Finish Line was downgraded by analysts at Cowen, who fear the footwear retailers' promotional offerings will pressure margins and relationships with major brands. Cowen cut its rating on the stock from market perform to underperform, also slashed its price target. Finish Line slipped nearly 9% to $9.11. The software provider Alteryx reported strong revenue growth and a surprise quarterly profit. The company said a rise in new customers helped results. Alteryx also forecasts a smaller than expected loss for the current quarter. And shares, accordingly, jumped nearly 16% to $25.30. Hertz said better pricing in the U.S. helped grow revenues, leading to stronger-than-expected profits. The car rental company said it has made progress in its turnaround plan, but cautioned that it is now entering a seasonally low period of weaker demand. And the company also said it plans to make some investments at this time as well. Shares were off more than 2%. They finished at $19.56. And General Electric is reportedly planning to cut jobs in its software unit ahead of its investor day on Monday. The conglomerate said to be considering layoffs across all of its businesses. On Monday, shareholders expect more clarity on the company's growth strategy, a long-awaited meeting. Shares rose 2.5% today to $20.49. And now to our market monitor, our weekly guest who's strictly focusing this evening on ETFs. He's got three picks that he says are a great way for investors to take advantage of the strong global growth we've seen. It is his first time on the program, and we welcome Jason Brown, Chief Investment Officer at FundX
Investment Group, yes.
FundX Investment Group. Tell me why you are partial to ETFs as opposed for individual investors as opposed to building a portfolio of individual stocks or maybe managed mutual funds. What's the appeal?
Sure. At FundX, one of the things we observe
is that market leadership changes over time. So sometimes growth strategies lead, sometimes value strategies, sometimes it pays to invest overseas, sometimes you're much better off focusing domestically. When you invest in an ETF, you're not only getting diversified exposure to whatever market you want to get, but you're able to change your strategy just by changing one symbol. You don't have to change your whole portfolio.
So you're going to give us three picks here. Are these picks that you are comfortable holding, or, you know, ETFs you can trade in and out of during the day? I assume that's not what you're advocating.
Absolutely not. So we started as a company investing primarily in mutual funds. And we use ETFs just as any other mutual fund. So these are really designed, even though you can trade as often as you want, usually you do so at your own peril. Usually for ours, we really want more of an intermediate.
So let's get to your picks here. And we're going to begin with one that is about as familiar as they come. It is an ETF, the Spider Dow Jones Industrial Average. DIA is the ticker symbol.
Sure.
Why start there?
Main reason, I think, is that right now, if nothing else, you shouldn't be fighting this market. You've got to embrace it in some way, shape, or form. A lot of people might say, why not just buy the S&P 500? Currently, you're just better served investing in a more concentrated portfolio like the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
The Dow has done a little better.
It has done
this year, and certainly you get all the blue chips there. Next one is iShares MSCI Momentum Factor ETF, the ticker MTUM. 123 stocks in it. How were they chosen?
Sure. So this is a factor-driven strategy. So as opposed to the Dow, which is just buying the market, here, instead of buying, let's say, cheap stocks, you're buying stocks that have good momentum on a risk-adjusted basis. Currently, you actually own a lot of the same names. But this fund's done a really good job of actually adapting to the changing markets over the last year. So initially dividend stocks, then mid-cap stocks.
And a quick thought on the final one. That's the Vanguard FTSE Europe ETF, VGX, the ticker.
It's actually VGK.
VGK, I'm sorry.
No problem. That gives you a great exposure to
add. My eyes aren't what they used to be.
Sure. To be able to diversify further into Europe, still owning household names. You're owning Nestle, you're owning HSBC holdings and so forth. So it's kind of the same theme of owning the global titans. And at 10 basis points, it's an easy way to add Europe exposure to your
portfolio.
You
just hit on the really the key point here, I think, is the low expense ratios that these funds have.
Sure. Low expense ratio is definitely a key factor. I mean, the only negative thing versus a mutual fund is that the managers don't get to pick which things they might want to exclude from their holdings.
That may be a virtue, though.
It can be a virtue. Times. Absolutely.
Jason, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much
Jason
for having
Brown
me.
Jason Brown with Fund X. Up next, more Americans are traveling, but with hurricanes battering Caribbean destinations, the travel industry is seeing a bit of a shift. We'll explain. Shares of Hyatt were higher today following an analyst upgrade that said the company's asset recycling plan, which is selling properties to buy new high-value ones, could return nearly $2 billion to shareholders by the end of 2020. And it's been a good year for some of the major hotel chains. Take a look at how Hyatt, Wyndham, Marriott, Hilton have all performed so far this year. You'd love returns like that. And those hot hotel stocks are part of an overall trend in the travel industry, at least domestic travel. It appears that domestic travel is the beneficiary of a hurricane-ravaged Caribbean. Seema Modi drew the short straw and is in sunny Miami with the state of travel.
More Americans are traveling, and that's good for the economy. Domestic travel is up. New York, Las Vegas, Los Angeles are the most popular destinations. But as winter approaches and the hurricanes have disrupted many holiday plans in the Caribbean, South Florida is taking in those visitors.
Miami is poised to benefit from some of the disruption in the Caribbean. We have capacity. We obviously have a great destination, and I think we're more than able to welcome those displaced travelers into the Miami market.
According to data from STR, hotel occupancies in Miami are up 8% in the past 4 weeks compared to the same period last year.
With the Caribbean and Puerto Rico in their current state and hotels being closed, that we're definitely benefiting from some what we would call positive compression. If they had plans to go to the Caribbean, to come to South Florida and come to Miami Beach.
Fort Lauderdale and Boca Raton seeing similar demand.
Cost of bookings are gone up. We've seen an increase in demand, and we've seen an increase in length of stay that we would expect during this period of time. You're having a lot of people displaced.
But there is one worrying trend that travel executives say could hurt the travel industry. International visits to the U.S. are down.
Right now, we're down about 3%. And every percent is basically, you're talking about $2.5 billion and 5,000 jobs. So 1% one way or the other has a huge impact.
Industry execs say a stronger dollar and policies out of Washington, such as the travel ban, are behind the slowdown.
The Middle East is, for all intents and purposes, not coming here. It's a shame because we get some great people to come here. The Middle East visitors spend a lot of money. But right now, their concern is, will I be stopped at the airport? Will I be embarrassed? So therefore, we've lost a tremendous amount of business from the Middle East.
But so far, domestic travel growth is offsetting the decline in foreign visitors. For Nightly Business Report, Seema Modi, Miami, Florida.
And finally tonight, tomorrow, as we mentioned at the top of the show, is Veterans Day, a day to thank all of the men and women who have served in the U.S. Armed Forces. And as such, the military was honored at the New York Stock Exchange today. Members of the services rang the closing bell. Soldiers sang God Bless America. And there was also a cake cutting, since it is also the 242nd birthday of the Marine Corps. And that, folks, is Nightly Business Report for tonight. Thanks for watching. I'm Tyler Matheson. Have a great weekend, everybody. And we'll see you back here next week on Monday.